Simply Financial with Christopher Calandra, Certified Financial Planner, is an innovative, comprehensive, informative, and cutting-edge podcast that discusses financial topics ranging from personal finance, economics, politics, and personal growth. Simply Financial will cover intriguing and thought-provoking questions so that the listener can simply increase their financial IQ.
Welcome to this edition of the Simply Financial Podcast. I am your host, Christopher Calandra. We are in season 4, and this is episode number 2.
So my guest today is Monica Sawyer. I was on her podcast not too long ago, and we had a wonderful conversation talking about 7 wealth building rules. And I enjoyed the conversation so much, I wanted to have her on the Simply Financial podcast. With our schedules, it's taken a little bit of time, but I'm so glad we actually are able to get it done today. Monica, thank you for joining me.
Oh, Chris, thank you so much for having me on. And yes, it's taken a little while, but I know good things are worth waiting for.
So you are a good guest, right? Because you are a best-selling author. The book is Choose Bliss, The Power and Practice of Joy and Contentment. You have your own podcast. Your site is corebblisslife.com. You help investors participate in the real estate investing marketplace. You've done this for, I think, 20 years. Is that right? Over 20 years?
About 25 years. And actually, Chris, my current site is blissfulinvestor.com.
All right. So I'm sorry I messed that up. Blissfulinvestor.com. And I understand, too, while we're doing the introduction, and I obviously got your website wrong, first off, but I also understand you have another book coming out soon. What's the title of the book?
The book is called the same thing that my podcast is called, which is Real Estate Investing for Women. So the podcast is Real Estate Investing for Women. The book is Real Estate Investing for Women, Expert Conversations to Increase Wealth and Happiness the Blissful Way.
Sounds wonderful. Now, I'm a male.
I noticed.
Will I be allowed to buy the book and read the book?
Absolutely. You know, the reason that I really focus on women is we have a little bit of a different approach to business. And so my approach is a very holistic approach. So I talk a lot about mindset, emotional mastery, money smarts, time management. So in addition to real estate strategies, I'm also looking at all of those other things that are going to be required to really create success. And so I find that when I target men, they tend to be like, oh, there's a lot of fluff, which is why I don't target them. But women really are interested in having a very blissful life, right? Now, what's interesting about you, Chris, is that at the beginning of our conversation, you were saying, I want my business to do well, but I want a lot of time with my children and my family. And so you inherently have this desire to have a balanced, blissful life. And so, of course, I think the book would be amazing for you. But I think a lot of men that pick up a real estate book aren't looking necessarily for that. Does that make sense?
It does. It makes a lot of sense. And it probably would be wise for men to take a look at that, because some of the strengths that women bring to business, as you said, are different than men, and weaknesses are different. And sometimes we could focus too much on what we want to focus on. But looking at some of the other elements of real estate investing, some of the things you just spoke about, probably would be a very healthy exercise. So I'm definitely will be a buyer of your book. And I'll take a look at it. So I'm sure you're going to be selling lots and lots of copies, but I will definitely be a fan of yours continuing through this new book launch. I think that's awesome. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited to bring it into the world and help more people discover how to be wealthy and just really enjoy the journey and enjoy the process, you know? Life's too short for us to work so hard waiting for the end to enjoy it. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. And that's, as a certified financial planner, working with clients on financial planning, investment planning, the attainment of financial goals like retirement, college funding for children, estate planning, mitigating taxes, things that we work with clients on day in and day out, Monica. It is so important what you say, and your focus is on real estate. As we talked about when I was on your show, I'm a real estate investor. I think real estate as part of a wealth-building plan is very worthwhile, very valuable. Not for everyone, but it is a good way to accumulate wealth over time. So we have a lot of commonality there. I wanted to ask you, as we kind of kick off the discussion, you use in all of your material, including in the title of your first book, and it's in your web address, is bliss. So what's your definition of bliss or blissful?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking that. So bliss to me is a deep sense of joy and contentment and the confidence that you can handle anything that comes your way. It's really about emotional mastery and emotional resilience. So it's a significantly deeper feeling inside of you than like just happiness, right? It's that place that you can call emotional home that no matter where you go, whether you go to complete despair or you go to complete euphoria, you know, both of those two extremes are very distracting and not very functional in life, right? But you want to be functioning in this place that I call your bliss equilibrium, which is your home emotional state. Does that make sense?
It does. I like that a lot. And you mentioned resilience. Can we talk a little bit about that? And part of the reason is internally here at Elliott Wealth Management, just to give you a little bit of a peek behind the curtain, is we have a couple of different locations, so the team is not together every day. So once a month we do a team call, and we kind of review some of the goals the organization have. We review projects that are going on, important topics, that kind of thing. And so we just did one recently, and we're at the beginning of 2020. So a lot of it was some of the key goals for this year and a review of how 2019 turned out, which was fabulous, by the way. We enjoyed a tremendous amount of success. But one of the things that I talked about was resilience. And it seems to me now that I'm 49 with a little more experience than I had before and having gotten knocked around a little bit over the years personally as well as professionally, life happens, mistakes are made, hardships occur, is that resiliency is so very important because there are examples where something negative happens to someone and they have a hard time recovering from it. Somebody, though, that's resilient will probably deal with adversity much better. And it seems to me that resilient people are happier, more fulfilled, and typically are going to enjoy more success in their life. To use your term, they're probably going to be more blissful. So can you talk about resiliency?
Absolutely. So one of the biggest advantages of resiliency is it allows you to stay open to opportunities and possibilities, and you stay more creative. When we go through adversity, we automatically go into, it's almost like clamp down, right? Like our bodies, our minds, clamp down on us. And that clamp down shuts us down from any opportunities that might present themselves as solutions. It also clamps down our minds so that we're not as creative in figuring out how we can get out of a situation or creative solutions to a challenge. So resiliency really is key, as you say, to bliss and to happiness, because if you're not resilient, you're going to stay in those unhappy places for longer. I talked originally about this bliss equilibrium. It's that resiliency that allows you to, when you hit despair, like you hit the ground, you bounce, right? Like a ball, like a rubber ball. A rubber ball, we might call, is resilient. It hits the ground and it bounces back up, right? And we want that same ability for us as human beings in our lives, because nobody's life is perfect. Nobody's life is without challenges. Nobody's business is without challenges, right? And so we need to have the tools to give ourselves the opportunity to bounce back and recover and create a better life from where we've been. So part of that is really focusing when something goes badly, really focusing on, okay, what's the lesson here? And it's not always obvious. And so for me, when I'm in a frustrated place or there's a challenge or I'm dealing with something, and I think to myself, you know, kind of in a sarcastic way, because I know people do this and I do it too. Okay, so what's the lesson in this, right? You're like, I don't want to think about that right now. I'm really upset. But but think about that, and if you're not able to come up with something that will put you in a better place, allow yourself to say, I will continue to look. It will show itself soon when I'm ready, and I want to be ready. So a lot of this is just self-talk. It's talking ourselves off the ledge, right? Because sometimes we do want to be upset, and we do want to be angry, and we do want to be in that place of, I deserve to be upset because this is a horrible thing. And the reality is that that is true. Our emotions are there for a reason. They provide a function in our lives, or we would not have them. God has given us resources that provide for our lives, and emotions are one of them. So it's really important for us to honor the emotion, to give it some space and time, but not to let it run our lives. I was speaking to Hal Elrod on one of my shows, and he said that he has the five-minute rule, which is you can be whatever emotion you want, but give yourself a five-minute deadline. And then after 5 minutes, like a lot of people are like, what? I want to be upset about this for 2 years, right? No, don't do that.
Yeah.
Right? Give yourself 5 minutes, and at the very end of it, he has a really concise thing that he says. He says, I can't change it. I can't change it. So if you can't change it, what can you do? How can you empower yourself to move forward and create bliss anyways? Right?
Beautiful.
And I used to have my own saying that I used to say, but his is so sweet and short, I've upgraded mine. So try that, right? Give yourself 5 minutes to be whatever emotion you want to be about it, and then try saying that. And you know what? If it doesn't work, that's okay. Try it again. Try it again. Don't give up on yourself. Resilience really happens when you don't give up on yourself.
That is awesome. Very well said. And what a great technique, that five-minute technique, as opposed to some people I know that do long-standing two-year pity parties. That's
right.
Counterproductive.
Or so grudges.
In this team call, so we talked a little bit about resiliency, similar to what you and I talked about, although you're much more eloquent than I probably was on the call. But we also talked about resiliency in terms of the business, Elliott Wealth Management Services. We're helping clients increase their financial IQ, win with money. We want to help people. And talked about the resilience of the practice, that what has been built here at Elliott Wealth is a resilient business, that if the markets had a downturn, or if tax law changes, or if the regulatory environment should shift, the competition is fierce out there, that we have a resilient business. And for the people that work for the business and are come to work every day to work hard on behalf of the business and for our clients, to know that they're part of a resilient organization, that the people in leadership are resilient and the people that are on the team in and of themselves are resilient, but the business plan, the business model, the culture of the business is resilient. How does that sound?
It sounds amazing. Could you define a little bit more clearly by what you mean by resilient in this? I have my idea, right? But what do you mean in this context?
Well, you used the classic example of, say, a business that, and this is an oversimplification, but I think it'll be a good illustration, is if you have a business that has only one client, I would suggest that that is lacking in resilience, because if that one client left, the business would have a hard time surviving.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a business that has multiple clients and has some diversity, that is an increase in that business's an increase in their resiliency, because if something should happen negative with one of their clients, there are others to pick up the slack, and there also is a history of adding other clients, so they might be able to replace the one that is lost. If you only have the one client, it's starting to hint that you may not be able to get other clients, and you would have a significant problem in the business model if that client mm-hmm. went away, or even drastically cut down on the amount of, you know, buying that they're doing from the firm. Is that a good example?
It is. It is. And it really points to some different ways that we look at resiliency depending on where we are in the market and what our businesses are like. So in a corporation or business such as yours, where you've got clients and products and all of that sort of thing, it's imperative that you have a beautiful flow of clients in. You have your clients that are very, very happy. And then as some of them leave, as they often do, right? Or not often, but as they do, you are able to wish them well and move on, because you're not holding so tight to them. They're not the lifeblood of your business, right?
That's exactly
right. And so, yeah, and so that is really, really, that really works in the context of corporations. Now let's take a look at in context of what your clients are actually doing in your business with you, or what I teach my clients. So with you, they're investing in a lot of different avenues, correct? What kinds of products do you often sell? You might have mutual funds, stocks, life insurance policies, right? Maybe even real estate, right? There's a lot of different stuff, right? Annuities. Those products, your client wants to create resilience within their portfolio, which means diversification, correct? So
yes.
For them, they're
yes.
going to want to have all of those things as a financial planner. That's what you're going to teach them, how to balance based on what their goals are, right? What they need, how much of this, how much of this, how much of this. And that creates a resilient portfolio for them so that their life goals can be met. And life goals are going to change from 20 to 30 to 45 to 50 to 70, right? Those life goals change, and you want to stay resilient through the whole time, and the way that you balance that portfolio is going to change, right, based on that. But when you talk on a business like mine, where I'm in real estate and so much of our money often goes into one project, so we're very, very heavy in one project, we don't have the opportunity for diversity until a little bit later on in the game. Like now, I have an opportunity for a lot of diversity. I can invest in different states, different housing classes, you know, multi-unit, single-family home, whatever it is, right? So I've been in the business for 25 years, so I can create that diversity. But someone who's starting out can't. So then how do they create the resilience? Well, first of all, you don't want to overinvest, right? You don't want to put more than your minimum down. You want to make sure that you're leveraging other people's money. People say all sorts of horrible things about banks. I love banks because they take 80% of the risk and give me all of the profit. Right? I put in 20% and I'm done and I get 100% of the appreciation, right? So it's all perspective too. So that's one way to stay resilient, is that you're not taking all the risk. But the other piece about that is to give yourself the time to be right. And let me tell you a little bit about what I mean by that. In 2008, there were a lot of people that lost their homes. There was a lot of pain out there, and certainly that was an unfortunate thing that had to happen with a lot of people. They lost their jobs, or things they couldn't replace their job. Things went wrong. They couldn't afford their mortgages, and they lost their home. But what happened to a lot of people was a couple of things, and they did not need to lose their homes. The first thing was that they were over leveraged, so they did not put the 20% down. right? So they didn't mitigate risk and keep themselves resilient by having a little bit of equity in the home. The other thing that they did is that they freaked out. They didn't realize that in the markets, whether it's the stock market or the real estate market, in the markets there are cycles. Now, this was a dramatic cycle, and it sucked. Admittedly, I lost 50% of my value of all of my properties. So I was multiple million dollars underwater on paper. But the keywords are on paper. I was able to hold them and ride the market back up. You don't lose money until you sell. That's true in the stock market, and that's true with real estate, right? So if you can hold, then you can recover. And that is resiliency in the real estate market. Giving yourself enough time and leverage to be right. So I was able to hold, all my properties recovered. I'm now way above water on that. Like on the other end, I'm multiple million dollars above, right? But it happened because I planned in my opportunities for resiliency. I have cash in liquid assets, so when things got bad, I was able to pay the mortgage each month on each of those houses, so I didn't have to lose them. I rented out those houses. Ironically, rents went up while people were losing their homes, right? So my cash flow actually went up. But it was a plan be right. I didn't have to make money in a year. I didn't have to make money with real estate in 2 years. It wasn't a get-rich-quick plan. I had the time to be right. And for me, in real estate, when you're doing something like that, that kind of business, that's what resiliency looks like. So resiliency, if you have a focus on that, it's hugely important. Like I say, in your own happiness, for the success of your business, and for keeping your stress down in both of those things. But it can look different in the different industries that you're in. So just find ways to build that into your business model no matter what you're doing. Does that make sense?
Very impressive. That was really good. So let's move on a little bit to what I really was anxious to talk to you about, this notion that, women are increasingly an economic force today. I think some of the statistics that I've come across is that about 4 out of 10 married couples have the wife earning more than the spouse. And this, of course, has been a trend for a long time, with that percentage of women who out-earn their husbands increasing a lot over time. And also, you have an environment, and this is what you help women with who want to become involved in real estate investing, is female entrepreneurship is exploding. I think about 4 to 10 businesses are owned by women. So can you talk a little bit about this strong, powerful trend where women continue to grow as an economic force in this country?
Yeah, it's so funny because to see how things have changed over the last 20, 25 years. It used to be that women were the economic force because we spent a lot of money, right? It used to say, for Christmas, you wanted to have, the malls had to be like set up for all the women because that was our economic force. We were known as the spenders, right? So I love... I love that women have now moved to the earners, and it's always been our capacity, but it's, again, just becoming aware of what we're capable of and the opportunities also opening up for us and also our determination to create those opportunities. A lot of women that I talk to now, I'll say, instead of buying a handbag or a dress, buy a house. And they look at me like, what are you talking about? And it's really just about shifting the focus. I actually have a really funny story about that. My little sister and I were out on a Sunday afternoon. We were driving. And she's like, Monica, let's go to the mall. I feel like buying a dress. And I said, ooh, I feel like going shopping. Yeah, let's do that. I feel like buying a new house. And she looks at me like, what are you talking about? But I think that this is more how us women are thinking, is I don't care about the dresses and the purses and the shoes and the earrings. I care about my children, my future, and my career. And not necessarily in that order, you know? And so we have really stepped forward into our power as far as earning. There's been a lot of societal support around that too. A lot of companies are making huge efforts to make sure that women get paid the same as men, that we get promoted into better positions. What's also interesting in the market that you see is that more women are going to college than men. So we tend to have more white-collar jobs rather than the blue-collar jobs. So we do tend to have these higher-paying positions. And in the investing world, I am so excited to see how on fire women are, because they want the generational wealth for their children. They want to be able to take nice vacations. They want to be able to take care of themselves and not have to answer to anybody else. I think all of us, and this is something, this is more of like a personal opinion and sort of relationship advice, whether it's welcome or not, but I think that a lot of women have gotten very tired of being told, I make the money around here, and told, you know, how much you can and cannot spend, right? As we're earning more, it's important that we don't turn that around, that now we become in our relationships more partnership oriented, where both of us are earning, both of us have a division of labor within the household and within our budgets, right? And both of us have the freedom to spend and to have conversations about our budget. So I think those are a lot of the big changes that are happening in families and also in our society about how women are really changing the way economics are working.
So let me ask you this in terms of a follow-up. I'm an entrepreneur. I've been an entrepreneur for the entirety of my career. And I'm amazed at the numbers of women that are gravitating to entrepreneurial endeavors, small businesses, you know, the catchy phrase today is the sideline hustle, that kind of thing.
Right.
Why do you think women are gravitating to entrepreneurship in such large numbers? I have my thoughts, but you are in this way more than I am. What are some of your thoughts on that?
Well, I would love to hear your thoughts, but my thought is passion. I think that men tend to define themselves by their work. Women tend to define themselves by their passion. And so a woman who's in a corporation who's working for somebody else, she is not as able to express who she truly is, what her passions are, what her beliefs are, what her values are, as she can if she opens up her own business. In her own business, even though our businesses tend to own us rather than us owning them, right? Because if we are passionate, we spend so much time working, and that's not always true, but a lot of times, and even though we sacrifice some of the time freedom, right, what we get is a freedom to express, a freedom to implement our passion, a freedom to change the world in a way that we feel will make it better. So I think that's really the big thing. In all the business women, you know, that's what keeps us in the struggle, because running a business is not easy, especially those first few years. It's hard. And what keeps us going is that passion. You know, it's what is it that we want? What is it that we have desired to birth and create in the world?
That's wonderful.
So what do you think it is?
So I think, having been an entrepreneur my entire career, I think, and I could get myself in trouble, right, because I'm going to tell my female guest what I think women are thinking.
you know what was really, really valuable about that, Chris, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot like that, but it is important for us also to get the perspective, right, because then we can create more balance, right?
So I think that with the increase in technology, it becomes easier to work remotely, to work from home, to work without an infrastructure, like lots of office and equipment and things like that. And entrepreneurship in some ways is easier because the barriers to entry are easier and the maintenance of businesses is easier backed by technology. And being an entrepreneur often can, doesn't have to, but can lend itself to flexibility on the work-life balance. You could easily start your own business and determine when you want to work, how much you want to work, what terms you want to work under, who you want to work with, who you want to avoid, and so on. And it seems to me that females are attracted to that because they have a lot of priorities that they juggle in their lives. There's a lot of households that are headed by single women. And if you're an entrepreneur, it often is a little easier to juggle that single parent lifestyle if you have an entrepreneurial business where you have flex time and hours. You could dial up your work intensity, you could dial it down, you could work at night, that kind of thing. And so I think that is what is helping drive women to entrepreneurship, because they still, as much as they want to compete and be successful in the business world, there are other things that are important to them. Could be a spouse, loved one, they're taking care of their parents, their children, exercising, living a healthy life with mind and body. And so I think that is part of what's driving entrepreneurship, because classically, if you go work for a big corporation, even though they've come a long way with flex time and not punching a card like you did in generations past, it's still way more rigid than the entrepreneurship world. I know for myself, I've enjoyed that. My son is in eighth grade, and I've coached him in youth football since he was in kindergarten, and this was the last year, and I was able to rearrange my business life to accommodate me coaching, and it's so valuable I was able to do that, Monique, because this is my last chance. He's my youngest. It's my last chance to coach, to spend the time with him and his friends on the sidelines, and it was such a rewarding experience. And you can do that if you work for corporate America, but I think by and large it's easier when you're an entrepreneur and a small business owner. So that's my thesis. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. So okay, I absolutely agree that that's why women go into business in a lot of cases. So when I talk about passion, a lot of times our family is our passion. Right? Yes. Our work is our passion. It's not like we want to necessarily change the world. Sometimes the world is our own household, right? And so I think we're saying very, very similar things. You said it in a different way with a little different context, right? In that we as women do want more time for to create more balance. We do want more time flexibility. Right? So entrepreneurship is going up so that we can, you know, pick the kids up from school at 3 o'clock, take them to their dance lesson or what, you know, whatever it is that we want to be able to do. So I absolutely think that's true.
Absolutely. So you help coach women, especially in the realm of real estate investing. And so when you think about the women that you've come across, that you've helped, what do you think are some of the barriers that women have that slow down or hurt their chances of being successful? I know they're all individuals, different backgrounds, everybody has their own struggles, but there's usually some commonality. And what do you often see as you're coaching women, helping them to be successful, blissful, especially when it pertains to real estate?
Yeah, I think there seems to be a hesitancy to take action. And that is not true for everybody, as you say. But I think the thing that I run up against the most is the confidence to go after a decision that they've made or to even make that decision. Like sometimes it's a lot easier to just keep analyzing and get analysis paralysis, right? You can learn, you can study, But until you take action, nothing actually happens. And so that's the thing that I run up against the most with my ladies is just actually getting out there and doing something, not having the intention, not having the great idea, not having the knowledge, but to actually go out and implement. And the thing is about this is true for everybody in every industry. When you take that first step, you are not going to know everything, and you are not going to know even enough. You can study, study, study as much as you want, but until you actually get your feet wet, you're not going to learn what the water feels like.
Yeah.
You know, you have absolutely. To actually get in there, right, and start taking steps, start taking action, and be okay with learning along the way. That's how we do everything in life. That's how we are born. You know, we're not born learning to walk, talk, read, you know, hang out with people. We have to learn all of those things along the way. We didn't get to stay in the womb our whole lives till we were perfect and we knew everything, right? And so we gotta do that. We gotta take those first steps. And so that's the biggest piece that I run into, and it's my biggest piece of advice. Get
all
enough
right.
information to get you started, but get started and be okay with the adventure of learning along the way.
Very good. So my daughter is 19. She's in college, and she's studying business, and she's learning a lot. She has her first internship starting this upcoming semester, and so this will be her first foray into the business world. Now, she's worked, but, you know, hostess at a restaurant, and she's helped here at the office at Elliott Wealth Management. In fact, she's here today, and so she's gotten some business experience, but she's in her, you know, her dad's company, and my wife, her mom, works here. You know, this is going to be a little different. Her first foray into the white-collar business world on her own. What advice do you give her?
Pay attention.
Well, I actually got you to, that was a good pause. That must have been a good question.
That was a good question. You know, for me, I would say have a belief in yourself that you can do, it. The thing that I see most with new people going out there is that they're so afraid to do things wrong, they won't do things, right? They won't put their powerful selves forward. And so be confident in yourself that you can do it and that you're really good at what you do. And be excited. Stay excited. That's the other thing that I see with a lot of people starting off in the business world is they go out there and then they get disillusioned really quickly because it's not what they expected. You know, stay resilient, stay excited, and keep looking for those opportunities for growth for yourself.
All right. That's good. I'll make sure she listens to hopefully this whole episode because you're a terrific guest and this has been a wonderful discussion, but especially this part. My advice to her, and I think it would be the same if it was my son, is the most important thing in this experience is that you learn as much as possible. And when I say that, at first glance, you might be thinking, learn as much as you can about the particular business or how the job is done or, you know, how the financials are reported or how the website is designed. That's part of it. But learn about the culture, how people treat each other, how decisions are made, how important it is to show up on time. I mean, it's a very expansive definition, and that's the most important thing, whether she likes it or not, whether it's something she thinks she could see herself doing as a career or not. But just to learn as much about the through the experience and come away with a lot of learning is what I think is by far the most important thing. And hopefully she has a great experience. But even if she doesn't and she rules some things out because she realizes those are not either what she wants to do or the type of people she wants to associate with, that's a great learning experience as well. So that's my advice to her.
I love that. I do have something I'd love to add, if you don't mind.
Please.
It is my belief that how we do anything is how we do everything. So there are a lot of people that take their first job, they realize it's not going to be the place that they want to be for the rest of their life, and they start to slack off because they're like, oh, it doesn't really matter, right? This is boring. This is not my career. It doesn't really matter. And you start to work as if it doesn't really matter. And the reality is that if you become an it doesn't really matter person, you are going to take those same work ethics, those same ideas, values, and beliefs wherever you go. It's going to start showing up in all areas of your life, and it will show up in your next job. So the key is, no matter where you are, you know, whether you're a hostess or you're in corporate America, be your best you. You show up with your values, your work ethic, and you build those skills and you build yourself so that as you move to the next career, the next job, whatever it is, that you're taking a better version of yourself with you.
That is outstanding. Thank you for that. That's a great add-on. As we kind of wrap up, before we started recording, you had mentioned that 2020, again, we're recording this in the early days of 2020, that you have some important big initiatives this year. We mentioned the book that's going to be coming out that I'm going to be reading. And the other big item is you're doing a female real estate investing conference, I think in March of this year. Is that right? In California?
It is. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's called the Real Estate Investing for Women Summit, and it's actually going to be virtual. I was originally going to do it live, but the room was only going to hold 100 people. There were a lot of things about it that made me feel really limited, and I do not like to be limited, and I don't want my ladies to be limited either. So I've decided to do a live event workshop, but virtual style, so that many more people can have access to it. I can reach a lot more people, uplift and empower a lot more women. But we are doing it workshop style. It's not a regular summit where you can kind of listen to a recording. You know, they come in one every day. It's going to be actually a two-day event. So that's going to be on March 14th and 15th. Like I say, we're going to talk about, it's going to be like a workshop. So we're going to start by talking about bliss and what that looks like for you and how you can have that and how real estate fits into that. Then we're going to pick strategies that will work. We're going to do some goal setting. We're going to talk about how to get financing. We're going to talk about what exactly this means for your life and for your future and what your resources are. And I'm also going to help people to embed whatever goals they set in during the event into their future so that they're pulled kind of magically towards them on autopilot. So it's going to be this amazing life transformational event. It's 2 days. Men can attend, but it is, again, with a women's focus and a real estate focus. So that's what we're doing, and we are doing it virtually. And to find out more about that, it's at blissfulinvestor.com/event. So that's blissfulinvestor.com/event.
Great. Our listeners should definitely check that out. And Monica, I was so excited about our discussion, and it was even better than I hoped for. So thank you so much. It was wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Chris. This was lovely to chat with you again.
Beautiful. Well, you have a great 2020. Good luck with these important initiatives, and we'll catch up together soon.
Sounds awesome. Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of Sage Point Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through SagePoint Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC, not affiliated with SagePoint Financial.
Simply Financial is part of the Exvadio Podcast Network. You can find Exvadio Podcasts at exvadio.com/podcast, the Apple Podcasts app, iTunes Store, iHeartRadio app, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever you find podcasts. So join us and stay informed and entertained.